Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Ralph Pointer, What's Happening? Today is Tuesday, December 11th. Paolo Freire, Read Your World. What does the recent Bush funeral really mean? Reagan, Bush, Clinton, Bush, Obama, Trump equals no difference. Ralph Pointer.
Thank you and good evening, my brothers and sisters. The overriding element in every situation or circumstance in a black life is racism. Birth, health, elementary school, housing, food, etc. Black lives have never mattered except during slavery and other circumstances where money is being made by our labors for others. The modern death penalty, 80% black, moved lynching indoors. The police, as the army of occupation, have taken lynching outside again. The lynch mob is the racist system, including the courts and the media. And because the lives of our heroes and sheroes who once protected us in our community do not matter to us, the people, our political prisoners are now dying in captivity. They are tortured and isolated. Only armed struggle can recreate our image in our own minds as well as the minds of others. Wake up, now is the time. Now, brothers and sisters, we're involved in a situation where Paolo Freire said, read your world, and we must understand that there really is no difference between the presidents. There is no difference between political parties. And we just use these names of those people in front of the party. Bush the First is a war criminal. He's a criminal for the American people. The largest, or the formation of the largest watchdog of the people, is not the NKGB of Russia. It is the National Security Apparatus, the CIA, the FBI, all of those organizations that they claim protect us from the enemy. But now it has all come to a head. We see with Nancy Pelosi now in front of the Democrats. There was never democracy in America. We see the Democratic Party means the people versus corporate interests. And if anybody watched the news today, to see Nancy Pelosi trying to put those two interests together, it is a joke. Those two interests will never be the same. But it doesn't matter as long as we, the people, understand that and act accordingly. I remember hearing many years through my political activity, the communists used to say, "Ralph, don't get involved with those Democrats, because the moment you get involved with the Democrats, it's the death of your political belief and your political energies. They swallow up good people with words and then do the opposite." I find that is very true. And so we have, I think for the last 10 years, over 65 to 75% of the people wanted single-payer health care. Well, we had Democrats, Republicans, and Democrats again. No single-payer health care. But I think when you get 65 to 75% of the people who want something that's justifiable, they're not talking about they want something to oppress other people. They're not talking about slavery. They're not talking about the destruction of the indigenous people here. They're not talking about imperialism. They're not even talking about the wall. What they're talking about is what the American people want for the American people. Without a doubt, it's single-payer health care. To start with, we know what justice is. Decent clothing, shelter, health, and education. We have a Democratic Congress, and let's see if the head of the Democratic Party dare say that. I think that those looking forward to hear those words from Nancy Pelosi, single-payer health care is on the agenda, will be very disappointed. But without further ado, I'm going to point to Sister Betty. I believe we have Tom, who was out for several weeks. Tom, your mic is open.
I'd like to say a few words about this so-called Medicare for All. You know, what keeps coming to my mind is what Glenn Ford from the Black Agenda said. The Democratic Party is not the lesser of the two evils. It is the more effective of the two evils. So what happened, this is now certain sections of the Democratic Party are pushing this thing called Medicare for All as a single-payer healthcare system. There's nothing single-payer about Medicare, as or seniors painfully know. It only pays for 80% of, not 80% of everything. Sometimes it doesn't pay for anything, like dental care or hearing aids. Supposedly, this is for seniors who suffer from these things. But it pays 80% for our, a lot of things. Well, what about the other 20%? If you don't take out supplementary health insurance from profit-driven private insurance companies, you're up the creek, because then you're going to have to pay for premiums, not to mention the deductibles and co-pays that both Medicare and the supplementary insurance have. What's single payer about this? It's multi-payer, and the healthcare and the healthcare private healthcare industry is part of it, and it's a boon for them. I'm not even going to talk about Obamacare, which is so bad that now that and people are well aware of this now that so the Democrats are coming up with another thing. Oh, okay, we'll have single payer, Medicare for all. Well, Medicare for all is not a single payer. We do have, by the way, a single payer health care system in this country for veterans.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what? The Trump administration wants to privatize the VA hospitals and then issue vouchers to veterans to go to these private hospitals. You can imagine what that's going to do. They're going to have to pay a lot of money. Right now, a veteran can go to any VA hospital, and he doesn't pay anything out of his pocket for his care. That is a single-payer health care system. It is a national socialized health care system run by one entity, the national government. That is what a single-payer healthcare system is. But and is anybody talking about doing away with the VA hospitals? Very few people know about this. And, of course, why do including veterans, Veterans for Peace, they know about it. But why do most people don't know about this? Well, here again, as Ralph pointed out, we do not live in a democracy. We live in a plutocracy. Everything is owned, is controlled by 1% plutocrats, the billionaires. And that's the way it has always been. The identity of these plutocrats have changed. When the country was first founded, it was founded on plutocrats that had large slave plantations or were wealthy merchants in the North, many of whom made their fortunes through the slave trade. So now the plutocrats are the bankers and the CEOs of the largest corporations. However, as Ralph pointed out, despite all of these wars, and which is nothing more than imperialism, despite imperialism, capitalism still cannot be maintained. The system is falling apart. The stock market is on the skids. So even people that make money are losing money. And of course, the Democrats, they don't. How do they analyze this? Of course, they don't analyze it from the from a capitalist, anti-capitalist point of view. They blame the whole thing on Trump, and his relationship, so-called relationship, with Putin. I predict that the ruling class in this country, they're going to get rid of Trump. They're going to make him resign. And if he doesn't resign, well, then they'll get charges like they did with Nixon. You either resign and avoid a jail sentence, or if you don't resign, when your term is up, you're going to be hit with all of these charges, and you're going to be put in jail. So that's my prediction, that Trump will not outlast his term. But so what? So what if Trump doesn't outlast his term? Who will we get in place of Trump? Pence? And as Ralph pointed out, we do not have a two-party system. We have a one-party system. And it's very effective because the majority of people still are under the illusion that one party is different from the other party. Yes, the Democrats, they push gay marriage and abortion, but the basic economic and foreign policy decisions are the same, and it's not working, and it's falling apart. Now, the big danger here is that if the majority of the working class in this country, if they do not, if their political consciousness is not increased, and if they don't make the connections vis-a-vis capitalism, they can easily fall under the influence of some demagogue. It's not going to be Trump, but it might be another Hitler. So that is the challenge of the left, which is in a state of disarray, the choir preaching to the choir. But that's the challenge of the left, is to somehow get to the working class, get to the working class, black, white, brown, yellow, get to the people who feel the direct contradictions of capitalism. Get to them and help them. You don't have to tell them that the system does not serve them. And they already know this, so they are at an advantage. The thing that they so far don't know is that they don't make the connections. They actually think that we have a two-party system and that this country is democracy. That they have to be dissuaded. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for that, Tom. And if they do impeach Trump, we have to look back and see. Whatever they charge him with, they could have charged Bush 1 with. They could have charged Bush 2 with. They could have charged Bush 3 with. I'm talking about Mr. Obama. But then when you say Mr. Obama, people could, they come back and say, well, lying to Congress is a crime. Lying to the FBI is a crime. But lying to the people, oh, that's okay. That's educational in itself. But by following that, I think I'd like to go to Professor Louis, who has a statement. Okay. One of the poems on who the working class is, and I make it a policy. We make it a policy. We never tell the poets what they should say. But our poets have some real ringers that we could request. Professor Louis, your mic is open.
Okay, Ralph. I wanted to ask you something. Do you have the ability to play records on the show?
We have. Yes.
Oh, okay.
If we
all
have,
right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
MP3s all nowadays. You're as bad as I am, Professor Louis.
Okay, right. They're CDs. They're not records. All right. So let me deliver the poem. on the block where I used to live, everybody had a dream, something that would lift you up off the block, out of there, to another place. You couldn't make it through the week without a dream. Across the hall, Doña Teresa had a dream, hitting the number, going back to Puerto Rico, buying a house, bringing all her children and grandchildren back with her to live together in the same little house where she was born, high in the mountains, looking out at the sea. You couldn't make it through the week without a dream. On the stoop, little Willie's on a mission, loose joints, real cheap. He has a dream of knowing the really big hustlers, making really big dope deals, an apartment on the west side, staying high all the time, and never, ever again going to school. You couldn't make it through the week without a dream. In the schoolyard, teenage Rosie dances to the big radio. She has a dream, a well-dressed, serious, respectful young man who will marry and take her away to a fine white house in Queens. In her dream, this guy also loves to take her dancing 5 nights a week in high-priced, fancy clubs. You couldn't make it through the week without a dream. On the corner, Fat Ralphie the wino actually watches like a hawk every day when the Brinks armored car goes by. He has a dream one day a bag of money will fall off the truck and he, Fat Ralphie, will get it because he has been watching in his dream. He knows exactly how he will scoop up the money, slip it in a paper bag from the garbage, and step slow around the corner, never coming back to the block again as long as he lives. You couldn't make it through the week without a dream. On the top floor, home from work, Sammy with the long hair has a dream. Rock and roll, Madison Square Garden, one move of his guitar sends thousands of teenage girls screaming. They tear their hair, they storm the stage, they pull down his pants. In his dream, Sammy forgets the guitar he got for Christmas long ago, lays under the bed broken, and anyways, he never learned to play. You couldn't make it through the week without a dream. Down the block in the True Light Church, a whole bunch of people had a dream. One day the clouds would open and Jesus Christ himself would come down with his robes all white and shiny and lift them up off the block to a place far, far away that was clean, pure, spotless, and had no alternate side of the street parking. You couldn't make it through the week without a dream. Some dreamed the Daily Double at Yonkers Raceway. Some dreamed robbing the bank and buying a farm in New Jersey. Some dreamed the New York State Grand Jackpot Lotto. Some dreamed killing the boss and running with the money in the safe. Some dreamed an accident, getting just a little crippled and collecting $20 million. So many pipe dreams. Some dreamed with a pipe, and me too. I had a dream that one night, in that one quiet minute, just before the dawn, the whole block would dream the same dream together. And that morning, like the day after a gigantic, soul-satisfying party, we would know we don't need to be movie stars or go to heaven with an electric amplified harp, but right here, on the block, we might start out together in the long and lifetime struggle for the survival of our souls. And we would know anything is possible if we dream the same dream together, because on the real side, on that block, you couldn't make it through the week without a dream.
Wow, wow. Again, wonderful, educational. We all have a dream, as Professor Louis said. Martin Luther King had a dream, but we have to dream together on that day. And when we do, this is what we're talking about on this program. I'm talking about when all of our political prisoners walk out of those death camps. But yes, the difference in our dream is we're working at it. We work at it every day. And yes, we're going to work with everyone else who has
a dream. Let me say one thing, Ralph. It's very true that Martin Luther King is always represented as a dreamer, but we have to know that he was more than a dreamer. He was organizer. And he put people into motion, and he worked with people who were in motion. And even if he wasn't a, he, even if even if he ran in a different direction than you, he was still moving forward. And it's always not about just dreaming the same dream together, but always trying to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
We got to do it as well. Yes, that's right.
So much for that. Sister Betty.
I thank you, Sister Louie. Sometimes the dream is just hearing a poem that reminds you about the dream, and that gives you the courage and the spiritual energy to get up and try it all over again. Before I go on and introduce the next speaker, I want to acknowledge that our Reverend Ajaye is in the house, and with Bishop Ajaye, I wanted to remind you and the rest of you, there will be no program Tuesday, December 25th. However, the Tuesday before that, which is next week, December 18th, we're having a special broadcast. We're inviting people who have a concept of what liberation theology means, especially at this holiday time. What people don't understand is that there are several theologies that overlap during this winter solstice. You have the crescent moon that's in the sky. You have people who celebrate Hanukkah. You have people who celebrate Kwanzaa. You have people who represent the prophet and the deity they consider Joshua ben Joseph, as he was known to his tribe, which is Jesus Christ. So we're going to have a discussion around liberation theology and why Castro made it a part of his social consciousness for his people. Having said that, Brother Ajaye, we thank you so much. We know you can't stay with us this evening, but we just want to say, Bishop Ajaye, thank you so much for tuning in. And your mic is
open. Thank you and Ralph for having such a real informative program and something that is definitely needed for this time where people are interacting in all kind of exchanges of ideologies and various things, but to have a clear, grounded program is just wonderful, and I just can't say enough about it. I thank you for inviting me to it, and just keep up the good work. Thank you
so much. Yes, Reverend Juan Carlos has also made it clear he wants to join our family at least once a month and give us an update on the caravan and other struggles for the people who have to seek sanctuary. And we're also going to be hearing from our warrior Daoud Andre, who is the champion of the Haitian people. Without further ado, I want to turn our mic over to Sister Anne Lamb. Brother Gill sends his apologies. He is not able to make it this evening. But I wondered if Sister Anne had any, besides her regular update, if she had any thoughts on this whole farce that's going on between the Democrats and the Republicans, and what, if any, impact she feels it will have on the political prisoner liberation struggle. Sister Anne, your mic is open.
Well, that's an interesting question you just posed. as this farce continues, they're all against our people getting out, as we well know, because they all represent the ruling class. So in that sense, I would expect, if anything, things to get more difficult in terms of releasing our political prisoners in the future and not any easier. So that's a serious thought there. I did want to say, as long as I'm here, that I would encourage people to please continue. Go to jerichony.org and make those phone calls for the Virgin Islands 3. The governor has until some point in January before he leaves office to make these decisions. These brothers have been down for 46, count them, 46 years. They have serious health problems. They shouldn't even be in prison. They completed their time. That's why they're in private prisons that the Virgin Islands government is paying for. They are no longer being held by the United States. So, you know, it's really important for people to make these calls. And, you know, we would really be hopeful that possibly, since he did promise that he was going to grant them clemency, that he might possibly actually do so, right? Now, in another thing, because these are not people who are necessarily political prisoners, but they are political prisoners, I think people know about the case of Cyntoia Brown. Cyntoia Brown was 16 years old when she was sentenced to life in prison because she killed a man who kidnapped her and sexually assaulted her for years. All right. This was upheld by the Tennessee Supreme Court, upheld the decision that Cyntoia would have to serve 51 years in prison before she is eligible for parole. All right? Because she's a juvenile. She was sentenced to mandatory life, but she wasn't sentenced to mandatory life without parole. Okay? So that's their little way of getting around, you know, the Supreme Court decision on that. But she certainly should not be in prison at all. She is one of the people who is, you know, survived and punished. There's a whole group of people called Survived and Punished, which deals with victims of domestic violence who eventually fight back and then are punished for, like, trying to defend themselves or trying to save their lives or trying to escape from some abusive, horrible person. And Cyntoia is certainly one of these people. So people are asking Governor Haslam to grant clemency to Cyntoia Brown so that she doesn't have to be in prison for another 51 years. And people can certainly make that phone call. It's 1-844-298-2731. Once again, that's 1-844-298-2731. I would really encourage everybody to do so. It's really important. Now, I did get a text today from Pam Africa, my dear friend. Hold on while I find it. had to do with, you know, this woman. I don't know how many people saw the video of this poor woman who was sitting in a welfare office with her baby. And then she was attacked by police who tried to grab the baby away from her and everything else. And she was facing charges. So there was a demonstration today in support of her. So the charges were dropped on the mother of the baby. She'll still need our help. But it's good to know Yasmin has been, at least all charges against her have been dropped. It was very brutal. I think a lot of people probably saw the video on Facebook and so on. Really awful. You know, another case of violent police brutality. The woman is sitting there waiting to get help with her small child. There were no more seats, so she sits on the floor. The security guard tells her to move, and she says, well, I'm just sitting down because, you know, I can't stand up anymore. So he decides he has to call the police, and then the police come in, and it's just a horrible, brutal video where they try to grab her child away from her. It's just awful. And she was facing all kinds of charges, but they've dropped all of those, thank goodness, thanks to people mobilizing. D12, among others, were, you know, down there today having a demonstration. So that's real important. And on the other hand, speaking of more prisoners, ICE, U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, has been trying to deport a brother who is down in Florida, who was born in the United States. He's never been, you know, an immigrant, and they've been trying to deport this man. When he protested he was born in the U.S., his name is Brown, Peter Brown, and asked to be able to show his birth certificate, the sheriff's office ignored him entirely. None of them helped him cancel the detainer or even looked into his claims, even though the jail's own records listed Peter as a U.S. citizen. Many officers even mocked him, telling him in a Jamaican accent that everything was going to be all right. All right? So this is another collusion between the Monroe County Sheriff's Department and ICE. So now that he finally has this cleared up and he was not deported, he is suing the Monroe County Sheriff's Department, and I think that that is a wonderful thing. So he should sue them. They shouldn't have been collaborating like that. And I also wanted to read a short poem by our brother Jalil Muntakim. I think people know he went to the parole board today. This would have been more appropriate for last week, but it's still very good. Chairman Fred and Captain Mark. All right. So for Chairman Fred Hapton and Captain Mark, we have this poem. When they come in the morning, will you be ready? Before the rooster crows, like chickens coming home to roost. They always come in the morning with their robotic, automatic, lockstep precision marching to a tune abiding their nightmarish intentions like a theme to a horror movie. There was no knock on the door. The no-knock law was in effect before it became law. We always knew it existed, since no sanctuary was inviolable for us as long as we inhabited the place where our breath took up space. For us, all of life has been an occupational hazard. They knew their target was a flag, a banner dressed in black leather, that the wind of freedom made it wave, a flap like thunderclap, awakening the dead. The living dead, whose thinking embraced the lies that distorted our lives into inhumane shapes of catatonic likeness in Frankenstein's image. Before the dawn, they raided under the blanket of a star-fallen night, dispensing fright and murder and death. Their bullets flew like the spray of demented holy water to exorcise, to purify in the gospel of their racist might, sanctifying their existence. And two lay dead. They claimed a victory as if they won a bet, enriching themselves in blood like vampires they fed an insatiable lust for power. The wind of freedom never ceased, the black leather flag draped over their coffins like a symbol to his immortal words. You can kill a revolutionary, but you can't kill revolution. You can jail a freedom fighter, but you can't jail freedom. By Jalil Muntakim. Just wanted to
thank
that
you, Jalil. Thank you so much for that, Ann. And which reminds me one more time that we, the people, voted in a mayor and a governor. That is de Blasio and Cuomo.
What's
who have
real name?
All right.
Yeah, go ahead.
Who have political ambition. And I say, if either of those gentlemen, and I use the word gentlemen loosely, are reelected with any vote by anyone who pretends or claims to be for freedom, the people who vote for them are nothing but political slaves. That is political reward denied. Our reward is to free our political prisoners.
Absolutely.
And de Blasio's statement, there was no excuse for the civil rights movement, which is merely a misnomer for liberation struggle.
Yep.
People didn't want to vote. People wanted freedom, and the voting is merely a technique to get to freedom. And so when de Blasio and Cuomo said no excuse for releasing for those people who fought back for freedom, only excuse for possibly releasing those who went gently into that dark night of oppression and stayed there, that tells you who those gentlemen are. And if we vote for them, it tells us who we are, which is most important. But I could go on with that. Sister Betty?
Before we go to Brother Joel, we want to open up the mic to our warrior sister, Gwen. Sister Gwen,
right.
Your mic is open.
And further, Ann, I hope that the information you have is up on the Jericho website. Excuse me, Gwen. Go ahead.
That's
okay.
That's okay. I'm actually at the same time talking to you, baking Christmas cookies.
Oh, big already?
Now, I know that I think a lot of people think I'm some airy-fairy, mandy-pandy, but, you know, you can be both. Warriors need cookies. This warrior is not allowed to have them, but I'll be making them for my veteran warriors. That's my parents, 92 and 97. So, hi, everybody. Listening to a lot, and I think this week I'm just going to give you, you may or may not know that there is a race coming up for the public advocate's office, which is a special election. And the reason why it's special is because we now have an attorney general who is actually not an attorney. So she got bumped up to that position, and there was lots of deals made behind the scenes to make that happen. But it cleared this seat. And there's some interesting things I think about this election that, that made it very appealing for me, and that is that there, it's nonpartisan. It's nonpartisan. Anyone can sign the ballot. And I really love that, because to be a slave of a particular party is really hard when you're running. I myself do not have any love for the Democratic Party. They sure have not done me right. But the rest of the people, many, many people in the city are registered Democrats. And so to run normally, and you have to be on that ticket normally. But this is not a normal election, which means that lots of other great things can be folded into this election. But I just wanted to also give you some of the stuff behind the scenes that you might not know. I told people when we got the referendum this time, and when you voted for the governor, to not vote for that change that said we were going to lower the amount of money to give to candidates, because I just knew that there was something tricky going on, because, you know, I'll go to the next things that are tricks. So, you know, there's a law called the anti-harassment law, which is actually a law that endorses harassment of tenants by landlords. And so I knew there was something tricky going on here. It's an enormous amount of money to run for this office to get matching funds. You must have $125,000 from the get-go in order for you to get matching funds, which is kind of amazing because it completely wipes out all smaller candidates. It's very, very hard for a small candidate to get to that particular amount of money. And, of course, it also wipes away all kinds of ideas and progressive thoughts, because instead of worrying about, you know, what you want to do, what you want to say, who you want to advocate for, you got to be a bank first. That's the first thing you got to do, is you got to be a bank. And essentially, he who can buy the election can win the election. I think everybody knows that, but it's a different feeling actually being in the foray than it is actually watching it from the outside. It's very frustrating, and it stifles a lot of people. It stifles a lot of very great thinkers. But one of the things that I do think is kind of encouraging here is that so far I think we're up to 15 people in this race. Now, lots of people are saying, well, that's crazy and that's a bad idea. But you know what? I don't think it's crazy. I think it's a good idea. I think that one of the things that's really refreshing is there's lots of choices now, because there's no parties that are restraining people. There's nobody that, you know, you got to jump on this one or jump on that one. You can come to the table with your own ideals, hopefully, and you know, you can put it out there. But, you know, you've got this huge issue with the money. So I just wanted to say that when they changed the law that says we're going to lower that amount of money, it worked completely against smaller candidates, because it used to be in bigger elections like this that somebody could give you up to $5,000. Now, the way this works is you have to get $125,000, but you have to get that money from at least 500 people. So now for the small candidate, who can now only accept $2,700, they have to work twice as hard to get to that $125,000, because they just cut the amount of money in half that you could get. Now, I wouldn't say that somebody like me is, you know, walking around thinking, oh, somebody's going to give me $5,000. I don't even have that in my mind. But I did want to share it with you, because it's a tremendous amount of money, but it's also tremendously hard. It's even harder now. It seems that this city council has such has it out for the public. They want to be here forever. They're like, you know, Mayor Bloomberg and Mayor de Blasio. They want to be here forever. They want to keep these jobs forever. And this is not how I am not saying that we have a democracy, but I'm saying that we should always continue to have a mind towards democracy. And that means that we should have these seats open and vacated so new blood can come in, fresh ideas, and we can move. We can never move because we can't get rid of the people that keep us down and stifled. And so when I look at people like Jemani Williams and Melissa Mark-Figueredo, these are the very people that gave you the new zoning laws. And I've been fighting these laws for years. These are the laws that threw you out of your house. These are the laws that created 72,000 people being homeless. And yet, these are supposed to be our champions. And you know why they're supposed to be our champions? Because of identity politics. Because this guy looks like you, or because she speaks Spanish, well, they have to be your champion. Oh, because she's a woman, she's my champion. I mean, it's ridiculous. I hope that people wouldn't vote for me. I would feel actually very slighted if somebody voted for me just because I was a woman. I mean, it's okay to be a woman. Guess what? You get to wear makeup and nice clothes. That's part of the package. You know, it's nice to be able to do that. But is it so far in the background when you're talking about political ideals, agendas, and it really is an insult to say to somebody, I'm only going to vote for you because you're a woman. Please don't put me and Melissa Mark-Figueredo or me and Hillary Clinton, please don't put us in the same mold just because we're the same gender. It's quite insulting. So I just wanted to bring you up to date on that. We are now, we have filled out the paperwork for registration. We have a bank account open. We have a name. It's Vote for Gwen Goodwin for Public Advocate Now. And we're diligently working, but we're also having to work as quickly as possible. And we need a lot of support and help. And I hope that I can make this come through. I also wanted to tell Brother Richie, is that who gave the beautiful poem on I Have a Dream? That I just wanted to say how beautiful that was. I loved it. And I think everybody has a dream. This is one of my dreams. And I'm one of those people that just keeps coming back up, even though I get down. I mean, this would be my fourth election, and they are very, very hard. But the last one, I came in second place, and you got a decent part of the percentage. So I don't know how life really is. You know, I don't have all the chips aren't in for me. I don't know, but I do know that I have tenacity. I will come back. Each time, even through failure, because failure is always the key to learning. So if you want to, if you have a lot of failure, you also had a lot of good lessons in your life. So I know that holds true for all of you on the other side of this line who are teachers, and I know that you have brought that kind of wisdom to your students. So I'm going to leave my comments there, and can't wait to hear Joel speak, and thank you for everybody else.
Thank you so much for that, Gwen. We do a lot of anti-politicians, anti-political talk. We are against many things. Without hesitation, we support Gwen Goodwin's efforts to her history. We know what she stands for because she acts on those issues. Speaks of school in Harlem when I first. But anyway, Gwen, you're in your corner. We hope everyone else is. And I hope all the information you give us, Jericho website, and Sister Betty, the mic.
We go to Brother Joel. I just wanted to give Brother a chance to respond if he wanted to. And I want to acknowledge Richie's in the house, and we will be calling on him. Go ahead, Tom. Did you want to?
Yeah. Hello?
Tom?
Hello?
Okay, Joel, your mic is open.
Hello?
Yes, Joel, your mic is open.
Okay. I saw you were calling on Tom. So, anyway, I guess you can hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. We're waiting for your word to...
I'm listening to the discussion, and I think that if we could get a platform for really raising public consciousness, at least towards the need for a revolution, or on the way to the revolution, to show some victories short of revolution that can be built on towards revolution. And if we could get, and one of the places that sometimes a lot of the publicity could be focused so that the masses can see what's going on is if we have an election campaign that's done right. And we shouldn't have illusions, because even if somebody wins or a few people win that have a different level of consciousness, the bulk of the government machinery, the bulk of the unelected bureaucrats that run the government day to day is still going on, and there's still all the corruption and the backroom deals, not so much between one politician and another, although that can be significant, but behind the scenes, the really big money, the really, really big money that almost automatically runs the politics of the country without even trying that hard, because a very American expression is that money talks and we know what walks, right?
Right.
Everything else, although that's not always true, because that's what they want us to think is a permanent situation. Although when the people do wake up and talk, they talk with a very loud voice that can overcome the amount of money that some people may have in a revolutionary situation. Because that money only represents power if people are willing to be paid off, to be bribed into conducting their lives and their politics on behalf of those who are the biggest criminals in the world who are running this country. But once people are at the point where they say that they're not going to take this, they're not going to be bought off, then people power comes to the fore and can get on top of the big money. And that's what we have to look forward to. It takes a lot of organization. It takes a lot of strength. People can't do this necessarily just as individuals without a coordinated organization. Don't get me wrong. If you don't have an organization and you're out there as an individual who wants to fight for justice, there's plenty that you can do to make a splash and to raise consciousness, but it's toward that progress of building a real organization. Now, we see what's happening in the midterm election. We have a few candidates now who are speaking more radically than we've heard in years in Congress and so on. I see where among these people, the unanimity of supporting Zionism, of supporting Israeli aggression, labeling and demonizing the Palestinian people and the Muslim world, that unanimity has at least been chipped away at by recent statements of some of the new Congress people. And I think that that's a sign. We shouldn't just look at them as individuals, but as tips of an iceberg, that people are getting tired of just doing what they're told by the establishment and believing whatever the mainstream media is saying. People are putting pressure on the government and on the Democratic Party, and that's why these new voices have emerged. That's where the credit has to be given, and that's where the hope lies, that people are rising up and breaking away in various ways. Now, I see, for example, what happened, what's been happening in France over the last few days, where Paris and a number of other cities are in flames, and the government has had to back down from its tax increases on diesel tax fuel. Now, there's a lot wrong with the politics of what's going on, but the power of the people was visible when they forced the government to back up, and they put the new president, Macron, in a very big problem, and it looks like he's not going to be president much longer because the Bronco is bucking. The Bronco is bucking, and we don't know where this is going to end up. Now, I don't like the fact that a lot of the anger is directed against the idea of global warming, but it's a tricky topic because while global warming is real and it does have the potential ultimately to destroy the planet, it's being used and hucksterized to try to make people think that we have to have a lower standard of living, that countries in the third world cannot industrialize because then they would be blamed for destroying the planet. These are problems that can be solved technologically. We don't have to capitulate to an austerity agenda under whatever pretext it's sold, even if some of that issue is true. But that's why many people are polarizing, not so much against saving the planet. Everyone wants to save the planet, but they know that it's being hucksterized to foment austerity and that the ruling class has no idea on cutting back on things that are destroying the environment and ultimately can make life uninhabitable on the earth. They know that these measures are phony measures. They're only halfways. And the basic thing that comes down to the immediate life of the people is that it's an excuse to promote austerity. So really things are just the other way around. But it's an example of how people around the world can rise up and match the big money, and that all the power that these exploiters and oppressors really seem to have stems from the complicity of the masses that do all of their work and fight most of their battles, killing and sacrificing themselves for the investments and the worldwide slavery, for imperialism, and even for their own slavery, because the people in this country cannot really be, even in this country, cannot be liberated without having a real democracy. That is real power of the people, where the people make the decisions and are not in a position where they get robbed and cheated and they have some billionaires at the end of the poker game telling them, here's some cost here, after they've taken you for broke.
So much for that, Joe. We've
right
dug into
that.
Richie's time, but I wanted people to get that thought. You must understand all of these issues are complex. They're used against us. And one evening we're going to have to take up the whole question of industrialization and global warming. Richie, we were sorry we cut you. Are you there?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Give us a few quickly.
Hey, yes, Richie. Can you hear me? Yes,
we can.
I'm sorry, I'm in the subway. The train's going by. I'd like to know if anybody, people hear me now?
Yes,
Did anybody see the woman that they videotaped in Brooklyn was attacked by cops and they took away her kid?
Yeah, I was talking about that earlier, Richie. They dropped
over.
Saw that right now, and I was just...
Yeah. There was a
demo
today.
What the Women's March is going to say about that, if anything.
Well, Well, they should say plenty about it.
Women's movement say about that, if anything. Another evening of information, and next week we're going to look forward to hearing from people on liberation theology. And
that'll be great.
I'm
looking forward to it.
All the chains.